It's a pleasure to have you here. Can you please tell us who you are and give us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, sure. So Zachary Dash, we were talking a little pre-call here. You can call me Dash if you'd like to. But I'm in Austin, Texas. I like to consider myself a serial entrepreneur, at least attempting to over the years. My very quick story to share that sometimes people can resonate with. I was working kind of a 9-to-5 job. I did the whole degree plan. I went to Texas A&M University, and I was on a track of kind of working at the time what I thought was my dream job, which was in sports. But around a few years of working kind of the 9-to-5 job, I got a little restless. I always had this entrepreneur bug. I felt like I could go out and do my own thing in the world. So in 2017, the same day that I proposed to my girlfriend, who is now my wife and mother of my new child, the same day I proposed to her, I actually quit my 9-to-5 job. And my goal at the time was I was going to go and teach myself programming. So I've always like understood programming to some level, but I wanted to just go all in and teach myself programming. And I committed to for, I said every single day for 3 months, I'm going to go to Starbucks. I'm going to try to learn some JavaScript and dive headfirst. I got about 2 months into doing that, and I learned very quickly, I am not a programmer. That is not my, I can do it a little, but that's not my skill set. But during that journey in 2017, I learned about Ethereum, and I learned that instead of actually deploying code to some database and figuring that out, I could just deploy a smart contract into Ethereum, and it would run it without me having to keep up with it. And that was mind-breaking to me. So unlike a lot of people who learn about crypto through Bitcoin and kind of get in, I learned about Ethereum first. And I went down the rabbit hole of trying to figure out this. I had this crisis in my brain of like, what is money? What gives things value? What is going on here? And I knew within probably the first few weeks that like crypto was the thing I want to do and learn about for, at that time, I thought for decades, but the more I've been in crypto, it feels like the rest of my life, I want to kind of be in this industry. And so fast forward over the last 6 years, I've just been building things, trying things, failing at things, meeting people, learning, adapting, and everything in between. And so that was a very quick synopsis of where I'm at today, and excited to chat with you. So everything leading us to here on this podcast today.
Yeah, that's cool. So what are some of the highlights of things you try to build or things that you built along the way?
Yeah, so in 2017 was whenever I quit my job and I was going to just go into crypto. And the first big boy job, I would say, where it's like, oh, wow, somebody's actually willing to pay me to be in crypto, which was crazy. I got hired on to be the CMO of a crypto marketing agency. And this was in 2018. And it was at the time that the bubble had just bursted. You might remember Bitcoin went like from 20K down to like 6K or whatever. And it was a moment where a lot of projects still were trying to run and grow ICOs. So over the course of January to December of 2018, I got to help grow a marketing agency. We had about 75 crypto clients over that time. And it's kind of when I, trial by fire and learning how to do, how to market projects and storytell in crypto, what works in crypto and what doesn't. And so that was a big learning experience. But my first personal project, January of the following year, 2019, I said, hey, I want to try my hand. I want to try to create my own project. I want to learn what this is about. And it's actually still Googleable today. If you actually look up, it's called Bomb Token. So I literally went to Upwork. I hired somebody to help create this smart contract idea that I had for a token. And the basic premise was very simple. It's like, can we create a currency that every single time you send the currency, 1% of the transaction is burned and destroyed? And it was an experiment on how to create a deflationary currency. Now, you might hear that today and might think that that's kind of like pretty normal or average idea in crypto and DeFi, like deflation and burning mechanisms. But at the time, it was at least many people thought it was a novel idea. So launched the token and gave away all the tokens for free. So we didn't do an ICO, never raised any money. We're just like, here, this is an experiment. Let's see what you guys think of it. And from that day forward, from January of 2019, this community circled around me that was just the first time I'd experienced about a group of people that were so excited about trying and building things in crypto. And so from that day forward, I still have this group of core community members and people I've met that have followed with me from that 2009 time, 2019 till now. And the DNA of the people around me are people who love to experiment and try new things, try things that probably won't work, but if they do, it's probably going to have a huge impact on society and humanity. People that are just open-minded, humble, trying new things in life. And so that was the first exploration, an experimental deflationary currency. Then in 2019, I realized that the community around me, although the deflationary currency was interesting, I more wanted to create a community of builders and creators and developers that we could do multiple experiments and multiple efforts of trying things that haven't been done before. And so we launched actually something called Block Zero Labs. The basic vision was to be a decentralized venture studio. And so those of you who might be familiar with accelerators like Y Combinator, a bunch of other ones, those entities basically accept companies to come in, startups. They invest a little in them, they help accelerate them for like 10 to 12 weeks, and then they get equity and they go off. Well, venture studios are the opposite. Instead of accelerating other projects, you try to build your own and you own basically the entire project. And
For a
so for
moment,
Block
I
Zero
thought you,
Labs,
sorry, for a moment,
no, no, go
I thought
ahead,
you were
go
gonna say they are the opposite. They slow them down.
ahead.
Sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. Are you talking about venture studios in particular, or? Oh, you mean a deacceleration model? Okay, I
Yeah.
got you. I got you. That's funny. Well, it's funny you say that because I think there is an argument to be said that venture studios are still unproven if they actually help. Like, nobody has successfully fully cracked the code on venture studios, and they're cool in theory, but in practice, we learned a lot. It's very, very hard to own and manage multiple different projects at once, because what I have personally observed is what makes a project special is focus, a small group of team united on solving one problem. And so when you're running a venture studio, you're trying to do multiple things, you're really spread thin, and that's transparently what happened with us. We just got really spread thin. And so it could be a deacceleration kind of model in a lot of ways where it's slowing down ideas. And so we were trying a bunch of things and throwing things on the wall. And there was one project in particular, one technology that really sparked with our community, which is still active to this day. It's called FlashStake, flashstake.io. And the basic premise was, instead of earning your yield, your interest, your rewards in crypto on a block per block basis, or sometimes a week per week basis, what if you could earn your yield from the future? So imagine if you have $100,000 earning 10% APY, so you get $10,000 over the course of a year, little by little. What if you could flash stake your $100,000 and earn $10,000 instantly and upfront? And the community loved this idea, loved this concept. And so we're like, okay, we'll build that. So we launched flash stake. It's still running to this day. It's a completely decentralized, permissionless protocol. That the DAO completely manages and controls, and that's still running. And so we did that for about 3 years. We never raised any capital. We could have raised capital a few times back in the bull runs, multiple bull runs that we could have, but we were really focused on just the product and trying to make it better. And so fast forward, FlashStake was probably the second project that I really got my hands dirty for many, many years and working on. And then about 6 to 8 months ago, we noticed that while DeFi protocols like FlashStake are interesting and novel and helpful, There's an underlying, deeper rooted problem, we believe, in crypto right now, which is crypto builders and developers and even auditors or whoever it is, they kind of feel exiled, especially here in the United States, where there's regulations coming, well, increasing, not just coming, it's already here and increasing. There's tax implications that are increasing as well. And so this idea of a network state popularized by Balaji, I heard about it probably a year and a half ago, but I didn't really understand it. And then, but about 6 or 8 months ago, I re-looked into network states and what they're about, and I fell into the same rabbit hole that I had fell into back in 2017, which was when I learned about Ethereum, saying, what is money? What is currency? Network states and the concept of a new country made me question, what is a country? What are the characteristics of it? What does this mean to be a country? And it broke my brain. And I love when things break my brain. When something breaks it, that means I want to learn more and figure out about it. And so that leads us to today. I'll take a pause. I know I can get a little I can ramble a bit, but that's what we're launched in November of 2013. It's called Epoch Island, which is basically an attempt to create a new country called Epoch Island.
Yeah, just small goals. Just creating a new country. I love it. Before getting to that,
Just a little goal, yeah.
yeah, just no, nothing, anything too ambitious, you know? But before you go into that, I wanna hear a little bit more about your bootstrapping experiences, and maybe you can give some tips on bootstrapping and things that you learn along the way, because I think that's very valuable to a lot of people. I think a lot of builders usually feel like they have to raise, even if they don't want to. I certainly have been in this place before. So, for someone looking to build something, how would you advise them to go about it in a bootstrap way?
This is a great question. Maybe one of my favorite questions because I could talk about this for hours. So please interrupt and jump in as needed. So to back up, I first want to clarify, I definitely think there is a time and place for venture capital, angel investors, in many projects. Putting money into a fire as fuel can help it. One of the personal reasons, and other people might resonate with this, that I have swayed away from taking on capital is the moment that you accept capital, whether it's a direct agreement or an indirect agreement, you are now responsible for other people's money. And I personally have never wanted to have somebody influence my day-to-day life. And I've always reverse engineered from personal freedom. And I understand that most VCs will invest and know that most of the money will be lost on most of the startups. But even with that, I have always felt this deep pressure and stress about taking money from somebody if I'm not 100% confident I can return that money to them in tenfold. And so that was the original internal reason I've always been unsure about accepting or trying to pursue capital. Now, if anybody listening is interested in bootstrapping, I think it's one of the most empowering philosophies and principles you can go on to know that you and you alone control your destiny, is just a freeing a feeling. And I think especially in frothy markets, people start to think they start to see all these people raising money. And they look at that as success. But when you look into those companies 2 or 3 years later, most of them don't currently exist. They've raised money before they found product market fit, and it is just a lot of wasted money. So for me personally, bootstrapping is hard, very much can be harder than raising capital. However, it's a force function for focus and trying to. Because it's your own skin in the game at risk to focus on the things that matter and not any vanity metrics. So, to try to give more practical advice, I am not a programmer, as I mentioned earlier, So anybody who's interested in bootstrapping, your first step one is you have to find your tribe. And this is the someone to complement you. If you're the technical person, finding the non-technical person that's good at BD, marketing, whatever, and vice versa. So one of the things I would focus if I were trying to bootstrap literally 100% of your time until you find that person, you're probably not going to get very far by yourselves. And then you have to find somebody. It's like relationship. It's not going to be overnight. I spent literally 6 years trying to find co-founders until I found my current two co-founders. And now it's like for life. We feel married for life. And making sure that each person feels respected with ownership or equity in what you're building. So that's kind of where I would start is finding that other person. And it's not easy. So you can't go into it thinking you're just gonna go to Tinder and find your co-founder. The other thing, just to I know I'm getting a little off track, but I think it's important to note. When I launched Bomb Token in 2019, we airdropped the tokens. And airdrops were not really a big thing. And so people were saying it's airdropped, so it's free, so this token is worthless, which is not entirely true. If something has value in the world, people will value it, therefore it will have a market value. And so what's really interesting is if you create something of value or potential value and give it to people, it will start creating economic value that you can leverage into hiring, recruiting, building, maybe VC capital in the future, who knows? So with Bomb Token, we airdropped it, but within a few weeks, it actually created a multi-million dollar market cap. And because we reserved 20% of the tokens in the treasury, in theory, that treasury can be used to then scale the project, the hard costs, which server cost, eating cost, electricity cost, like the things you can't avoid. You can scale it up. So I'm not suggesting everything needs or should have a token. There's many areas which it doesn't. But one thing I love about crypto is it does give you the path to pursue introducing tokens if it makes sense and if you can add value to it. There's a million other things I could say, but I'll take a pause to see if there's any of that that I can circle back on or clarify.
I think there's a few things we can touch on back later, but I'll say that it all kind of comes back to that notion of what is money at some point. Because money is, in one way, anything that we assign value to. So if you can assign value to something, or not a tangible value, but a value of some sorts, maybe even a value of speculation, then that might be a way of working things that otherwise wouldn't be able to get done. But if that being said,
Yeah.
if you're on the end of other,
Yeah,
if
go
you're on
ahead.
the other end of the spectrum, you have to be careful because you're going to be assigning value to something that might not actually going to have any value in the future. So it's
Yes.
that kind of two-way street. And I think the point of finding
100%
co-founders.
oh, sorry, I think there's like a 1 second delay, so if I'm interrupting you, I apologize. Go ahead, go ahead.
That's okay. I'm just gonna finish this thought real quick. I think the thought of that you mentioned about finding really good co-founders, it's really underestimated because it's really something that's not replicable. It just everyone will find co-founders in their own different way, and I feel like that's a part where a lot of people fall short, and it's just not really something you can fix easily. It just kind of has to happen, hopefully at the right time in the right place. And that's all the 2 cents I had. You can take it up from here.
No, that's totally right. And the co-founder is just not even always about their skill set, but it's somebody that's going to be there with you through the hard times as well. It's an emotional support system. It's a friend. It's so much more. But the only last point I'll have on on this. You mentioned about currency and that value in the world on how to anything can have value. I think one of the most underappreciated currencies in the world is kindness. And that might sound a little woo-woo, but if you show somebody true kindness and appreciation and gratitude, I have been amazed. People will run through walls just to feel appreciated. And so even if you don't have any money in your bank account, whenever I've seen over the years somebody in our community step up and do something, even if you don't have the money to pay them, simply taking the time out of your day to write a personal message, record a video, do something that says thank you will be amazed that that person will be with you for a life, will never forget that you acknowledge them, and they're going to ride or die with you regardless if they get paid. So I think a lot of people think of currency as money, but just affirmation and appreciation is a potentially free and more abundant currency to leverage.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's what you said is genius. Everyone wants to feel special. Everyone wants to feel special. And if you can genuinely give that to people, then they're actually gonna be with you for the right reasons. You remind me of this founder that I interviewed a couple months ago, Sok, and I think he really resembles that kind of person that he's just so kind to everyone. And in return from that, he has this amazing community that kind of goes above and beyond to make things work and keep pushing the boundaries of what can be done. But now, coming back to network states and all that talk, what is a network state? What does that mean? How is it a country? Is it another country? What is it even it's aiming to be?
Oh, it's such a good question. So I guess just to attempt to even give some background here, the network state as a concept was popularized by Balaji, who is a previously the CTO of Coinbase. You've probably seen him on Twitter. Maybe you've heard about his $1 million Bitcoin bet. But I think the first place to go research network state is thenetworkstate.com. Balaji has laid out everything really well there. And the reason I'm actually pulling it up in the background is so I don't want to butcher his personal definition. So he did a really good job of explaining it. If you want to learn about network states, there's one sentence, there's one paragraph, there's one image, there's one essay. You can go as deep as you want, but just so I can read it and so I can not butcher this. A network state is a highly aligned online community with a capacity for collective action that crowdfunds territory around the world and eventually gains diplomatic recognition from pre-existing states. Now, that's Balaji's definition, and it sounds, even to most people, that will sound very abstract still. And one of the things I think I personally want to get across the most with network states is we're still trying to figure this out. It's a new concept. And so what a network state means to me might be different than what it means to you, might even be different than what it means to biology. But at the core of it, the best analogy that I can give at like if you're trying to tell your aunt about network states, so the best analogy I can give is Bitcoin created an alternative currency to the traditional way of what we think of currency. Whether you like Bitcoin or not, doesn't matter. It's an alternative way to use currency. And what I think of a network state is simply an alternative country to what currently exists today. So historically, we've thought of countries like if you were to just go up to somebody, hey, what's a country? You're going to get 12 different answers from 12 different people about what is a country. Some people will start telling you about the borders of the country. Well, that's not really true. Look at Alaska and Hawaii here in the United States. You know, some people will tell you, well, it has a government. Some people will tell you what has all of these different characteristics. It's so hard to answer that question. And how Balaji describes what technically defines a country is it has diplomatic recognition, meaning another country simply acknowledges you're real, you are a thing, you are a country. And so I think a lot of people are excited about network states for various reasons. Some people who grew up playing video games, it's just a cool thing to think about. Like, you ever played like Civilization or anything? It's just like, huh, if I were to create a country, what would I do? What would be the buildings, or would we have like flat, would we have trees everywhere? What would be the rules? What would be the laws? And so it's just like a fun theoretical concept. And what I think network states in the book that Balaji has written really does is it says, if you actually want to do this, here are the steps that you can follow to achieve your own network state. And there's so many areas, but I want to take a pause to make sure I'm not just bulldozing through here. But the one thing that also I think Balaji really points to is, I think a lot of people get caught up in the physical land of a network state and how does that come to life. But what is more important is actually the underlying united belief system and philosophy of a group of people. So you might have already seen, on Facebook groups or Twitter, groups or whatever it is, there's a united belief system. And so if you can basically have this group of people that are into keto or they're into CrossFit or whatever it is, you might have felt these people, if they actually want to have a belief system that is cohesive enough to go live somewhere together, to create a country in their own belief system. I think that's what network states means to me. It's the ability to opt out of the current options of countries, which when we're born, we're all forcibly opted into something we didn't agree to. It's just like countries just claim us as humans. And instead, network states flip that on its head and say, no, you don't claim us. You can join if you follow our rules and you opt into it. You have personal agency to do that. So I'll take a pause to see if any of that needs extra clarification, but that's how I view network states.
Yeah, I think this is one of those topics that can be broken apart and taken to a gazillion different directions. But it's also really interesting because there are so many unknowns. The way I kind of think of it in a nutshell, it's kind of like Vatican of crypto. It's its own thing that it's part of what we have already, but it's its own entity. And I think the most gray area for me, it's when it comes to laws and recognizing property and rights. For example, let's say this network state, let's say Epoch Island, buys a block of land in the US, for example, and let's say it is recognized, Epoch Island is a recognized network state, whatever that means. Then, if it buys that block of land, what exactly does that mean? Does that mean that now that block of land is in itself another country and therefore has its own system of laws? Does it mean that it still has to obey to United States laws because it's essentially in the United States and you're buying it from the United States? There are so many areas that I have no idea how that would actually look like in practice, and I know nothing about law. So there's a lot of questions there for me that I simply cannot even fathom what the actual answer is. Do you have any idea how those things would turn out to work?
Yeah, it's man, this is such a fascinating 'cause all the questions you're asking are still deep ones on my mind. I think there's one fundamental thing that needs to be like understood is like a lot of the questions that you just asked circle around of like, okay, well, what's the law or what is what is actually on a day-to-day going to look like in this island? What are the implications of it? And I think a lot of people circle back down to like the land aspect. So I think what would be a fun exercise, from A to Z, I'd love to explain how Epoch Island could actually go from this digital theoretical to an actual network state with a real example. So let me attempt to do this. I've never done this live or in person, so let's see how this goes. So let's assume that, like, if you actually Google right now, private islands for sale, you can go do this. I've done this in my own time. And there's like 25 different islands you can, ranging from like $25 million to like $600 million or something like that. And not to say that network states need to be a private island. I'm just giving one example of what could happen. So I actually have a Miro board right now with all of these islands and their jurisdiction and the cost and the acres. And some of them already have like a what's the word called, like a tourist retreat attraction already there, like a getaway. Some of them are completely undeveloped land, but a lot of the land is either owned by, I've seen in the Bahamas, there's some in Belize, they're just all over the world. Now imagine you went to buy the land, but you talk to the, you say there's one contingency. If we buy this land, we want the land to actually be given up and sold by the country. So Bahamas, I know that you guys currently own this land, but we want you to agree that this 120-acre lot in the middle of nowhere is Epoch Island, and that you will officially recognize us as our own entity, which means you don't have any jurisdiction here, you don't have any taxes here, nothing is here. So why would Bahamas do that? Like, what's in it for them? Well, if you have enough leverage in the world, anything is possible. So how do you build leverage? Well, a lot of the US will build leverage by having a massive army. I don't want to do that, and I have no reason to do that. You can build leverage by capital. We have money. We're just going to pay you. There's been parts of history where, like, the Louisiana Purchase or some other land is just purchased by one country. So it's like, all right, we're going to buy it. There is leverage in terms of like import and export taxation, a lot of tariffs that people will do. So a real example could be if you go to the Bahamas and say, hey, if you allow us to call ourselves and you agree on terms that we are our own country, what we're going to do is we're going to actually give you 5 million Epoch tokens, which is our national currency. So now you have some ownership and upside in like who we are. And so if we do well, you do well. Also, by us being a by you agreeing that we are our own country, it's going to drive tourism here, which is going to increase the economic activity in the GDP of your island, of your country. So there's going to be economic benefits for you there. It will be news and a storyline, so we can push this in the press and drive activity for you. So you can see all these like these little negotiation tactics. And so if you have the Bahamas essentially agreeing, oh, that's a good deal, we agree to that, you've essentially now have one country who's agreed you are your own country. And then if the Bahamas says it's true, then you can go to other countries and replicate the same thing. So I hope that's like one example is that for a country to truly do it, that was just, there's a million other ways to try it, but that's one example of like why the Bahamas or somebody would actually be into open to that. There's all these countries like Malta who are trying to increase their blockchain crypto footprint, or Argentina, I think, is like there's a bunch of countries, and so you have to start with a country that's going to be more experimental in testing this, because the choice is clear for them. Either we have this lot of land that's doing nothing for us, it's not helping us at all, or we agree that it's Epoch Island and we have all these extra benefits. So that's what you have to do is find a country, probably not the United States, that's going to be willing to work with you. And the only way you do that is with leverage. And last thing I'll say is that's why we're trying to build leverage right now through the Epoch Elders that you're obviously familiar with. If we actually have 1,000 of the top crypto investors, builders, developers, everything, if we all have them in one group, you're going to have a lot of leverage in the negotiations. So hopefully that gave at least a more pragmatic approach to what could be done.
Yeah, I think that was a good overview from A to C, how that could actually be implemented from a more practical standpoint. But can you dive a little bit deeper into more the tiny little steps that need to happen in order for that to actually take place? For example, you need some sort of governance, you need some sort of currency, you need a whole system of things to be put in place to make sure it gets where it needs to be. So can you tell us a little bit about what are those nuances and maybe even go more into what is the actual roadmap that Epoch Island is looking at right now? Because I think that's really interesting and provides further context into how these things can actually take place.
Yeah, sure. It's a great question. Actually, for anybody who wants to look at this online, you can go to epochisland.io/pathway. It's PATHWAY. And it outlines a 7-step process. You could call it a roadmap. It's more of like a vision map of like the outline of what the steps to take to accomplish this. And so I'll read through them quickly, and then I'll give more context to each of them. So number one, by the way, this is not for anybody at Network States, it's just what Epoch Island is currently planning. Number one, establish governance. We think governance is the first and most important thing. That's why we put it first. Number two, we deployed a currency that is live and active, Epoch currency for anybody who wants to look that up. Number three, we wanted to nominate elders. Our elders are essentially the leaders, people that we leaders of Epoch Island that we really want to help influence the direction that we go. Number four was establish funding. So last week we actually launched something called an initial time offering. Really fascinating concept, maybe we can go into it. It sold out in about 13 minutes, which was pretty crazy to see. So some form of funding so that you can do things in the world. Number five is generate revenue. So different than funding, revenue means you created a product or service that actually creates value in the world that people are willing to pay for. So that's actually what we're into right now, and we're having these Epoch Passports, which is we're excited to kind of talk more about, which is a revenue generator. Number six is what we believe is acquiring the actual land. So finding the land that is good from an economic standpoint and maybe a physical geolocation standpoint. Does it have a good climate? All those questions. And then number seven is actually negotiate for diplomatic recognition. So those were like the 1 to 7. Actually, instead of me deciding, are there any of those seven that you would be interested in me diving more into? Governance, currency, elders, funding, revenue, land, or diplomatic recognition?
I think maybe the revenue side is the one that's the most interesting to me, but I'm not sure if you've have faced more people asking you questions about a different one. So if you know one to be usually the most popular one, you can go for that one.
Yeah, maybe revenue would be a good one because it's most top of mind, and I'm actually writing a few articles about it right now. So when we think about revenue for a network state, it's the first step that we did is like, well, how do countries currently generate revenue? Like, let's not try to reinvent the wheel. What do they currently do? So I spent a few weeks just researching. There's like 18 different revenue streams that countries can have that are some that may want to implement, some not. Obviously, taxes are top of mind for a lot of people as taxes, but there's tariffs, there is, property taxes that you have to pay. There's so many things that countries do. I'm writing an article that outlines the 10 most common revenue generators for countries, and then it gives a parallel to how can network states leverage these. Because a network state, because it doesn't have land yet, it's limited in the ways that it can generate revenue. So you have to think of maybe digital or on-chain ways to generate revenue. So there's two primary revenue streams that we are
Sorry,
exploring.
before you go
Yeah,
ahead, I
yeah, yeah.
think I just want to take a moment to appreciate how amazing it is that this technology allows us to have this kind of conversation and consider those kind of applications and put them in practice. That for me is so wild that it allows to do that kind of stuff. And I just wanted to put it out there. Please go ahead.
No, I get goosebumps to this day. So lucky that I was born in this era of technology that it's even possible to do these days. Like, yeah, I still wake up every morning like I can't believe this is here. And from blockchain to network states, it's fascinating. So I plus one that.
Without having
So
to fight any wars as well, which is a huge plus.
exactly. Every single other country up until now has mostly been done through conflict and death. And the fact that we can create a nonviolent way to opt out of historical violence is just fascinating to me. Like Bitcoin didn't have to overthrow a government to be Bitcoin, it just was. And so that's what's so fascinating to me is the optionality, a personal agency, self-sovereignty that network states provide. So completely agree with that. So there was two revenue streams that we are exploring. One of them is live right now. So we created a basically a DeFi protocol called the ITO protocol, and it's fascinating. So if anybody in the world is currently looking to buy crypto, what they do is they get some money, they put it into ETH, and then they go buy some meme coins or some altcoins or whatever it is. And then if that token gets wrecked, if it goes down by 80%, well, you've just lost your money and you're out of luck. So we wanted to create a technology that could protect people from their own degenerate demise, is what we say. We wanted to allow people to be more responsibly degen. So we created this ITO protocol, and then essentially what it allows you to do is instead of risking all of your money, your USDC or your ETH into buying all these other cryptocurrency, what you can do instead is lock it up, let's just say for 2 weeks. And for 2 weeks, you can receive back the token or the asset that you want to receive upside in. And during that 2 weeks, at any point in time, if that asset does not perform well, you can return it and get back your original money. So if I take like $10,000 and I want to get Dogecoin, well, I can put in $10,000 and get Dogecoin back for $9,000. Now, if Doge gets wrecked, goes down, no harm, no foul, I get my original money back. But if Dogecoin goes through the moon and goes, on a bull run, you can actually keep the Dogecoin and basically lock in a profit from that. So that was kind of this initial time offering kind of protocol. So we launched it last week. We did it with our own token called Epoch. And it was fascinating. Within 15 minutes or so, it was completely sold out. And so for 10 days, people got to have complete exposure to Epoch, have 100% upside in Epoch. But if they ever wanted to get back their ETH or their USDC or any other token, they could get it back. And so this technology that I'm bringing up, the reason I'm categorizing it under revenue is because there is a protocol fee switch that can be turned on that. Just like Uniswap has a fee switch that can be turned on. This one, if we turn it on, any project that wants to use the protocol or a person like you yourself, you can deposit funds in there. We can take a protocol fee. So we actually had a project that you're probably familiar with that reached out to us that wants to do their own crowdfund of I think they're aiming for like $5 to $10 million of funding that wants to use the protocol because it solves what they wanted to do. And if we have a small fee switch, now, that might seem like not a lot of money, but if you can basically recreate ICOs but in a better way, that's a lot of inflow of potential activity. So that's one example of revenue.
I
I'd
think
be
that's
happy to,
really
go ahead.
interesting. I think that's really interesting, but of course, there's the downside risk for the protocol specifically. So, how would that turn out in a bad scenario? For example, people put their money into a specific token, and then one side goes up, the other side goes down, and end up the protocol doesn't really have enough money to redeem everyone else. How does that scenario pan out?
Yeah, so there's two ways I would answer that. Number one, to clarify, The protocol never takes your deposited money and does something with it. It sits there. It's yours. It's not lended out. It's not lent out. It's not, people aren't borrowing against it. So to clarify, you can always check that your money is there. So this isn't one of those robbing Peter to pay Paul kind of things. Two, security auditors like yourself are critical at just finding, bugs and exploits. So we had five really high quality auditors that took multiple attempts to find exploits. People are probably familiar with Fubar on Twitter. He was one of the auditors. QuantStamp as a company, and a bunch of other people that you're familiar with
Hans
that
Fries
were able
as
to take.
well. Hans Fries is a really good one, co-founder of Cyphron.
Hans is great. This some of the top auditors on Odarena. See, you're familiar with all of them more than I am. But they were able to audit it and give us the green light. Now, does that mean the protocol is fully safe? I would say anybody in crypto should expect that any protocol that they use has a chance of exploit, and always use your money accordingly. But so that was getting a security audit. The way that we architected it, it was never under collateralized protocol, so it was always like fully 100% collateralized. And then third, one thing we really liked about the protocol, our own specific ITO, was we had enough money in the treasury where if something went wrong for whatever reason, we could basically pay back that exploit, which obviously there wasn't an exploit. Everything went smoothly. But we felt for those three reasons, we felt very comfortable about launching it, and we're looking to do another wave too. So hopefully that clarifies kind of the security aspect.
Yeah, awesome. And I think now is a good time to circle back into more fundamentally, what is Epoch Islands trying to achieve? What is the hope behind it? And what is driving this whole creating a country kind of thing?
So one of the good and bad things about decentralization is it allows for multiple people to have multiple opinions on the question that you just asked. In theory, the Epoch Islanders can take Epoch Island in whatever direction that they want to take it. Right now, because it is fully decentralized, so no matter what I tell you, what I personally think right now, it might not end up being that. And that's good and bad. And it's yet to be known if a decentralized community can actually build something, because how do you have a unified vision that maybe is even a contrarian vision if it's done through voting and governance? So some people in the community believe that Epoch Island should, for example, buy an actual island, improve upon it, and basically be a home for the top crypto builders and developers and investors in the world. So imagine if you could actually know that there was only 1,000 people in the world who have the passport and access to this island. You could go there, just the networking value of being there, just the insight and education that you'll be able to have there is invaluable. So that's like one example. Some people believe that Epoch Island should never even have land at all, and it should be completely digital, and that it should be more of a, to be honest, more of like a builder's group, that develops things like DeFi protocols and earns revenue from that.
Like a stateless nation, sort of.
A stateless nation that's a, it's a, it's just digital in theory. So there's that. Man, there's so many directions. So, some people have even explored, hey, could you buy a cruise ship and host like conferences on the cruise ship and generate revenue in that? And because actually, I was thinking about this. You probably go to some crypto conferences and they're fine, but you have to figure out the housing and the transportation and all that. Imagine if you could go on a cruise ship for a week and everybody there was like talking about layer twos or some crypto thing. So like, there's that. So it's and then as grandiose, the bigger grandiose vision is to have like a whole, they call them like startup city, where it's actually. Think about a mini Singapore where you're actually trying to grow it out. So that's what, so I think one of the most difficult parts is I have my own personal beliefs on like the direction that we could and should go in a practical manner. And I think the question that you ask is spotlighting the biggest gap and void of Epoch Island right now, which is we're here, we want to go there, but what does the mid game look like? What is the 1 to 3 year game plan look like? And so I'm working on personally some articles right now where I'm going to kind of present, here's what I actually think we should commit to doing, and here's the core belief system that I think we should have. And then if the Islanders accept that, then we'll have a united front to do that. So I would actually love to hear from you. I just threw out a bunch of random concepts and ideas. Are there any of them that like resonate with you more than others? Or like, what would you do if you could build your own digital country?
Thanks for throwing back. So all the things that you said, they're not mutually exclusive, right? They can all be done. It's just a matter of prioritizing the order of which should be done, all those things. I think all the ideas you brought out are great, but then when it comes to the implementation, obviously you want to prioritize things that are realistic to achieve at the moment and generate revenue so we can leverage that to go and do bigger and better things. So starting in Singapore right off the bat probably not gonna work out, right?
Good luck with that.
Starting a stateless nation, that doesn't sound too hard. There's very little to no red tape in doing that. So that's probably the easiest, the lowest hanging fruit that we can go for. Make products that generate revenue that we can leverage, reinvest to start doing other things. Probably, if it's successful enough, the cruise ship, because you don't really have to go for the whole ordeal of actually building a country. You're just buying a cruise ship. And maybe that can even be a tiny country in itself where you can perform little experiments. And there's a million reasons why that would be a great upside, because having the cruise ship itself can generate revenue even outside of the crypto conferences. Plus, you can have residents in the cruise ship. There's a million different things that I see being feasible by having a cruise ship. So I guess it really depends on what percentage of revenue the islanders want to see reinvested into growing the epochs, and what percentage of revenue do they want to receive as a reward. And speaking of reward, maybe that's something interesting that we could touch upon as well, of how do the participants or the citizens or whatever it's called, this group of people get rewarded from that? Because as noble as these goals are, nothing is going to get done if we can't feed ourselves. So how do the rewards work?
It's a great question. You touched on so many things there that maybe we can circle back on another time offline
You
because we'll probably run out
can
of
break
time.
them
But
apart if you want to. Sorry, you can
no,
break them apart if you want.
it's all right. So we had a great we just released this on YouTube. It's called The Chronicles of Ebok Island, where we asked this basic question to the people on the call, like, what do you expect from Ebok Island? Like, what is its problem? Is it solving for you? What reward are you trying to get? And so, as we talked, you and I talked about earlier in this call, there's multiple types of rewards for people. There is the economic, which is the first thing that comes to people, which is like, I buy this token or I buy this passport, which we haven't really talked about passports, that for whatever reason, we it could signify ownership in the country. And if the country grows, so in theory would be the value of your ownership of the country. So there is the economic, I would say we can't ignore that people are economically motivated. The one conclusion though that we came to on the assembly call was, while economics can be a motivator, either through appreciation or rewards, it can't be the only, and it probably shouldn't be the primary motivation, because there's always going to be a better way. In our group, Pax is a guy who mentioned it like this. There's always going to be a better way to put your money in a pile together and make money. Like, so trying to compete with like VCs or investor DAOs is not like the primary goal. So what are the other values in rewards you can give to people, we've kind of outlined five categories. So number one is access. So your reward could be meeting people that you wouldn't normally get able to meet, or getting into a conference, or going to a local meetup, or even being on like a call, like a office hours with some of these elders. Like, so access is a big reward for people. We have influence. So for better or for worse, some people will get rewarded by feeling that they have a fingerprint on the direction of Epoch Island. That's a reward for me to know that I'm a part of something. I helped make this happen. There is a social reward that we have to, when I say social, I don't just mean friends, but for better or for worse, if you ask like why are CryptoPunks so valuable, it's a lot of part is it gives people a social signal to themselves on a label, an identity of who they are. So that's a reward to people, an identity is I feel like an Epoch Islander. If we actually achieve our goals, that can be a reward just being part of that. When we asked this question, actually several people said this, which was surprising. They want to be an Epoch Island because they want to be associated and connected with the concept of network states. Like network states right now are cool and fancy, and like for better or for worse, it's a social status symbol to be connected to the network states. On the financial side, we're releasing, and again, we haven't talked about these passports, but basically, the passports you can own, and at any point in time, you can void them and basically redeem your underlying ownership of the island. So imagine if the island purchases a bunch of crypto DeFi projects or physical land, and we tokenize it. The actual passport, you have literal ownership of the land and the technology and everything underneath it. So that's like an economic one. And then last but not least, the islanders can vote if they wish to pay themselves Epoch tokens, which is our native currency. So on New Year's Day, the islanders voted to distribute 250,000 Epoch tokens to the islanders, which was a reward for basically being the initial people and liquidity providers of Epoch Island. So I just went through those pretty quickly, but like those are the primary. Well, another one I just didn't mention, if we actually attain network state status, there could be tax benefits. So the same reason people live in Dubai or other places, you could have 0% taxes in theory, and Epoch Island is another one. And then the last one is I've been quietly pushing for a legal defense fund, which basically means anybody with a passport that's building in crypto, if we believe that they received unlawful litigation from some country, that we want to defend them to the both. So it's kind of like a regular country will defend you with their guns and their tanks. We want to defend you in the legal courts with Epoch Island. So I just brainstormed a lot, but those are some of the primary rewards of Epoch Island right now.
Yeah, that's very cool. A lot to digest in there. But I think one thing that we can touch on is the governance system on how does it look like and what is it based on? How did it originate? Because there's a million different ways to establish governance and all of them have several flaws. So if you could describe the current governance system Epoch Islands has established and the reasons behind it, that would be great.
So we knew from day one, we wanted from day one, or literally day zero, to be decentralized as 100%. So, made from personal mistakes in the past, when you start centralized and then try to decentralize over time, it's a novel mission, but it's kind of like a deer that's never been having to fend for itself, kind of having to all of a sudden get thrust into the jungle. The community doesn't know what to do. It doesn't feel like it has any ownership, and therefore this is like doesn't ever get their hands on. So our primary mission with Epoch Island was from day one to be decentralized. So what that actually means is, We use a stack of OSnap from Ooma and Gnosis Safe to manage basically the treasury. So the let me take a step back. So the first thing we did was airdrop these Epoch tokens based off of some previous holdings, and anybody could take their Epoch, pair it with Ether, and add liquidity, lock that liquidity, and basically mint something called V Epoch. So you might be familiar with all the various like VE tokenomics that were popularized in the past. This isn't completely like that. We actually created our own infrastructure for doing this, but it has the principles of the longer you lock liquidity, the more V Epoch you have, which is basically voting Epoch. And the more voting Epoch you have, the more voting rights you have. And so our current governance structure is anybody with a minimum V Epoch balance can make a proposal to basically mint Epoch or do something in the ecosystem. And then it needs a 51% or 50% or greater threshold of approval. And that goes over the course of 6 days. And then there's a 1 day, basically a veto system that can be done. So that's how it currently works. And then the Epoch elders have the ability to basically make proposals. Now they don't have the ability to pass proposals. That's still done with the V Epoch system, but they have the ability to basically expedite proposals into reality if they feel like something needs to move quickly. So let me try to recap in a more succinct manner. We have a two token and a two party system. The two tokens are Epoch and VPOC. VPOC is the voting token. And we have a two party system, which is the Islanders and the Elders. The Islanders are the people who vote with VPOC, and the Elders are the people who can make proposals quickly. So kind of a separation of influence there. So I could have articulated that better. Is there anything I can clarify based on that?
I think you articulated it in a simple enough way that people can get a clear picture of how the thing works. And there's obviously a little more to the tokenomics that we could discuss, but there are other things that I kind of want to get into. And maybe if someone is really curious about the details about the tokenomics, they can go onto the website. I was curious about the time frame of how fast or slow you think some steps would take to take place. For example, well, I'm just trying to make up some random milestones here, but maybe you can give us actual milestones and kind of put them into perspective on how long you think they're going to take and on why that is. Can you please give us a rough idea of how long you think things would take to build, like from here to having a full-on network state and the goals in between?
So the public goal that we've stated is build a network state by 2030. Honestly, this has never been done before. So, given that there's no playbook or case study of this, it could take us 5 decades, it could take us 3 years, like who knows? But like publicly, we've made it our mission to be 2030. The reason that that number was chosen is one, it's a nice clean number of the top of the decade. But more than that, it's going to be okay. So the hardest part, let's start with the hardest part. So in my view, it's going to be the end game, which is the diplomatic recognition. And for us to get there, we need to have the proper leverage to somebody to give us diplomatic recognition. So the three points of leverage are like a population footprint, so at least some form of people, resources, so in the form of money or capital or land, and then revenue. So those are the three things that we're focused on: population, resources, and revenue. And so I wish I could sit here and tell you, if I was CEO of Epoch Island, I could probably give a better, more pragmatic answer to those goals. But because it's ultimately up to the islanders, we might zig and zag for a few years and then find our way there. But in terms of the immediate goals, what we're trying to launch in this quarter is the passport system, because we believe that that is the primary recurring revenue stream of Epoch Island, and will also solidify our population. So it'll do two things. Now we can point to what our population is once we have passports. We can point to how much capital we are estimated to get on an annual basis. So it's currently proposed to make 1,000 passports, and at a recurring basis, it's kind of more like an ENS model. So if you're familiar with the ENS domain names, you can renew them on a yearly basis. And if we actually max those out, it would be about $500 million of annual recurring revenue in the system. And if we can do those two things, get 1,000 passports maxed out and have, I know this is big picture, but that'd be about $500 million of annual recurring revenue. We would then have the leverage to start doing some really fun stuff. That's when you get the fun of acquiring land and building and doing all types of crazy cruise ship stuff. But to be honest, as much as it's fun to think about those things, unless we can actually create the annual recurring revenue and create a united belief system and structure, none of that really matters. So hopefully that's my political answer to your question.
Yeah, no, it all makes sense. I understand that it can be really hard to put a time frame to this bunch of unknown things, especially because it's not a centralized entity where someone can just point their finger and tell everyone where to go. So it can be really hard to give any sort of accurate time frame, but I appreciate the
Sure.
effort. And do you see any, are you aware of any other network states that are emerging or anything resembling network states? Are you involved with other communities that are trying to do something similar?
So the best place that I have started my own research, and it's interesting you say that because we don't feel like there's a true good directory of all the people trying to do this, and then also like the flavor of what they're doing it. So we're actually working on nothing to do with Epoch Island, but basically like think of CoinMarketCap, but for like network states that goes into understanding of that, like a wiki. There are some good resources that I've seen, and I'll have to try to maybe send you some links later. But one of the best places to start, if you go to the Network State Conference live stream that they had, it was like 70 projects that are in the space that gave 10-minute presentations. And so they're all doing it in different ways. So like Cabin is one that's doing it with like more like a co-living kind of thing. There's people that Praxis is creating trying to create more of like a city membership vibe to it. So there's a million different ways. But I think yeah, the Network State live stream is a good place, and it's actually timestamped, so you can go watch like 10-minute clips of all of these is a good place to start. And we are wanting to be the place that you go to learn about all of these. So starting on Fridays in our weekly Epoch Assembly, we've now started spotlighting what other network states are doing. So like there's this one called, I think it's called Theopatra, Theo something like that. Where they created this really cool graph where in real time you can see the real world assets and land that they've purchased on this Google Maps. So there's lots of cool innovation out there happening right now.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'll definitely have a look into that. And for people interested about knowing more or maybe getting involved, how can they be part of Epoch Island or try to contribute in some way?
Yeah, so the best place to go is epochisland.io, and there's a lot of information there, but I would say step one is actually to go to thenetworkstate.com and just read the first two pages. Just read the first two pages, and it'll tell you pretty quickly if you're interested in network states. If that's a yes, then go to epochisland.io, look at how we're attempting to do it. And sure, like if you want to get Epoch tokens, if you want to become a voter, you can do all of that on our dApp that we created. But personally, what I would love to see every Friday, 10, it's very late for you, as we've described, at 10 my time, but I think it's 4 p.m. UTC, we host this Islander Assembly. And I would love to just meet anybody on that call, answer questions, because we're trying to build this country kind of one by one, person by person. So that would be step one. But you could also join Discord. We have a very active community and helpful community there with answering questions. Twitter, you can always hit me up on Twitter at Zachary Dash. I'm always down to talk network states. But those are the primary places.
Awesome. Dash, it's been a pleasure to have you here. Had a lot of fun having this chat. A lot of questions and answers. Definitely ended up with more questions than I had when we started. But hopefully, we can circle back in a round two at some point later in time. But yeah, it's been a pleasure, man. Thank you for taking the time.
Thanks for having me. This hour and however many minutes here went by super quick. Hopefully we can do it again in 2030 and we can celebrate on Epoch Island.
Sounds great. All right, thanks, man.